is a transmission, because it's not just taking in what I'm saying and listening to that. It's feeling what I'm saying, the quality of that information, and letting it touch you through all of your senses, not just your intellect, because your intellect won't serve you when you're dying. You will need your whole nervous system, your whole, emotional system. You'll need every part of you to do that as well as you can.
Hello, hello, and welcome to all of you beautiful souls. Thank you for tuning in today to the Heart of the Soul podcast. My name is Amana, and I am so happy that you're here. This is a space where we explore what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth, connecting about that which unites us all. Together, we will unearth that which is often unseen and unspoken through the ancient ritual of storytelling. And I would like to invite you to sync with the cycles of our moon with me, enjoying new episodes on full and new moons. It's my hope that soaking in these stories will bring you closer to your own innate knowing and center you into a more embodied, alive version of your beautiful, unique self. Today is Sunday, November 12th, 2023. The moon is currently waning and moving towards a new moon tomorrow. And I have Zenith Virago here with me through the cosmos. And so she is in Australia, which means today is actually the 13th of November for her. I have been following her work and have listened to every podcast interview I could, as well as finding her TED Talk and the film Zen and the Art of Dying. And I just really love the language that you use about death and dying, dying well. And I am just extremely honored and excited to be having this conversation with you here today. If you would like to take a moment and introduce yourself in whatever way feels good to you as we begin here.
Right. So hi, everybody. My name's Zenith. It's a name I chose when I was young, and it's been lots of fun living this life with that name as an adult. I am the EO and the educator for the Natural Death Care Center and the founder of that organization, which is a charity. And mostly I work with death and dying and ceremony, which has been an incredible journey to experience. I also get to be a feminist activist quite a lot. And in regards to this, I put on a fundraising event once a year called the Vagina Conversations. And we raise money for a local women's service here. And I also do an action which is part of the global V-Day action, which happens all over the world, where we are unruly, wild, in our fullness women on the main beach of Byron Bay at 6 a.m. in the morning on the 14th of February. So I get to indulge all of my the best assets that I can bring to life. So I get to be, a rat bag and an activist, and I get to be someone who works with a sort of ministry to assisting people at the end of life.
Beautiful. Yes, I loved, when I first found you and was hearing your name, and I was sort of curious if it was the name that you were given at birth or if it was one that came later, because also, so me, when I was born, my parents named me Ashley, and that just never suited me. And a friend later gifted me Amana. So I love that you addressed that already. And also your last name, I heard in The Art of Dying, you were saying that Virago. Can you share with me again what your last name is?
A Virago is a feminist archetype, and it's someone who holds the qualities of strength, courage, and wisdom, and which people deem to be masculine qualities but are essentially female qualities. And I found that in the book Gynecology by Mary Daly when I was young, looking for a surname. And I thought, oh yeah, that's good. I was 27, I'm 66 now, so it's 40 years. And I have really become that woman. And I think there's a great payoff in setting something that works for you so that you can be the fullness of who you are and who you are in a way of contributing to making the world a better place.
Absolutely. One thing that I heard you say that is death is certain, but the time and circumstances are not. And I feel like this is just a really important fact that many of us don't even think about or address in our day-to-day life. I know that you obviously are working in death work, and I worked in palliative care and death and support people in grief and creations of ceremony now. But I'm wondering what else you can say about that, or why is that important to recognize that it's certain?
Well, I can't take credit for that statement. It's a profound Buddhist statement that anybody who is exploring Buddhism will come across. But it's an like lots of Buddhist statements and their philosophy, it's very grounded in reality. And just yesterday, I was at a ceremony for a friend of mine, younger than me, who died from motor neurons, which is a terrible disease. A lot of diseases are terrible, some easier to bear than others. But the baseline is, it's some sort of trick that humans play on themselves, that we're going to live for a long time, we're going to grow old, and then we're going to die. But we all know that lots of children die, babies die at birth, they die after birth, young children die with a range of diseases or accidents, teenagers, young adults, death is omnipresent. It accompanies us all the time. And if we're lucky, we get to live a long life, although some people live a long life and it's a miserable existence. So life can be too short or it can be too long. But there's, that great line from Mary Oliver, which is, what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life? And that's a really great thing to think about. And you can only be yourself. So it doesn't matter whether you achieve big things or you just live every day in a way that you can sleep with yourself at the end of the day. As you go to sleep, you think, that was a good day. I was in service. I'd never messed anybody over. I didn't lie and cheat, anything like that. So you're only bound to your own integrity and then to others. But there's two things that are going on. One is about your own experience, but the other is that many of us have friends or family who are dying, and now a lot of people are choosing to kill themselves and end their own lives. And so we're in this duality. One is about ourselves, what do we want to do? But the other is how to live with loss. And for young, it's all an experience. And the more familiar you become, so the more death you experience, in a theory, the better at it you should get, and to be able to assist others who are having that experience. But each death has an equation. So some deaths you'll just go, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And others, it will just sideswipe you and take you to your knees. So it's sort of who the person is, how they live and how they die, who you are, your relationship to death and your relationship to that person. And it will give you a different response each time. And so sometimes you'll think, oh, I'm getting good at this. And then other times it will just, as I say, blind swipe you. And so it's good to just know that you, and whatever your reaction is, it's great. You're a feeling human being, and it can be so painful, or it can just be a surface level. But whatever it is, feel it fully, but it has to keep moving through you. So the more we experience other people's deaths and open to that experience, the better we're going to be with our own death. If we get diagnosed with something, if we're in an accident, if we have 2 minutes on the side of the road and we're dying, to be able to reflect on our life, but also to be present to that moment. So the woman, as I say, who just died with motor neurons, part of what I was saying at the funeral is that I see a lot of people die without fear, and they're doing it as well as they can. But every now and again, I see someone who's dying with grace. I don't see it so often, but once you know that's possible, they set a great example for us of how we would want to die with whatever circumstances we have. And if you're listening, you will know the difference. If you've been with people who are dying without fear, which is great, but when someone dies with grace, it's like they affect everybody in their orbit. And there's a sense of wonder of how they can be doing that so well and also be so generous in that, in their experience. And what that does is it's clearly, it's better for the person, but it's also better for the people that they leave behind, because there's a sadness that that person has gone. There's a sadness that we're going to miss them, but there's some sort of wonder in having been with them during their dying. And so that grace arises in death, but it's something that we are honing during our life to live well and to die well.
Yes. So my first like big initiation into death for me was when I was 25 years old, and I've had the honor of gathering 40 years now. When I was 25 years old, my first love, his name was Bjorn, and I was present there with him and his mother when he took his last breaths and died. And that just completely transformed my life and the way that I interact with the world around me ever since then. Has enlivened me in a whole new way to just embrace the preciousness and beauty and incredible gift that life is. And also to honor death. And so for me, I remember then like the next really big death for me was my firstborn. I had a baby. We named her Hartley, and she was born, and we knew from when I was like 6 months pregnant that she didn't have kidneys, so she wouldn't live after she was born, but she was full term and she was born and lived for a few moments, and I got to hold her as she took her first and last breath. And after that experience, that was a really, again, a hard experience, a transformative experience in a whole other way. But I love that you speak to the way each death changes us in the equation and our relationship and where we're at and how we live. And I remember being a part of some groups of mothers who had also had babies that died. And I had a few women be like, you know, like, what's going, like, how can you just be like so peaceful with this? Or how are you okay already or now or whatever it was that they were seeing in me, but like you're speaking to, I think that's mostly because I had this experience with Bjorn before that, I had been through the depths of grief and death in a way already, and they hadn't had that first big experience with death themselves.
And I think the other aspect of that is that there's a very common saying that people say that, you know, there's nothing worse than losing a child. But, you know, actually there's a lot worse. And because everything is relative. So if, for example, if you are a person who's never had children, but you've lived and loved someone for 50 years or more, and when that person dies, it's like half of you dies, then, you know, you can't compare death. But the principle that you're speaking to and which I'm sort of speaking to is the fact that we're part of something bigger. We're part of the great mystery. And with that, so some people will make the assumption, oh my God, it's so terrible that you had a baby that died. But we don't know what that life and death is going to do to us. And so we're all very aware of post-traumatic stress disorder. But there's also the counterbalance to that, which is post-traumatic growth.
Yes.
Which is a concept that doesn't get a lot of air. It's not mine. I was driving along and I heard it on the radio and I stopped the car. And this is before podcast, and you could go back and listen to it, because I absolutely got that it would be life-changing for me. And it was, because what I realized was that a lot of people who experience death of someone close to them experience post-traumatic growth, especially if it's a baby, a child, a teenager, where they take that experience. So, for example, when a child some years ago in Australia, a young girl died through some sort of ecstasy drug-taking experience. And because the other kids with her were terrified, because it was an illegal activity to tell the parents, the girl died. But if they had reached out, they could have got medical attention and she may or may not have died. So those parents took it on themselves to become advocates to other teenagers to say, never be afraid. You know, whatever you're doing, tell your parents. It's nothing to be afraid of, because lives are at risk. And they spent some years, you know, creating an organization, doing that work. So out of their daughter's death, they became much bigger people than they could have ever imagined. They were just an ordinary couple. Their lives would have just continued on, except for they rose to that occasion, to what life demanded and what death demanded from them. And it's sort of when you tell those stories about Bjorn and about Hartley, that you know, you grow. You have a choice. You can either be destroyed, you can be damaged, you can be mediocre, or you can be beautiful. And it's not for everyone. Some people, the relationship is so intense, their life experience teaches them different things, and they just do the best they can to survive and recover from that experience. But for you, it inspired you in a way that took you on a different journey and to be of benefit to others. And so, you know, even in this podcast, the information that we're sharing is going to change something for someone. And all my life, I have a bottom line of one. All I have to do is make a difference for one person a day, and that's a good day for me. And that's very easy to achieve in the smallest way or in a big way. And so that inspires me to live a life that is useful and beneficial and also rewarding. And people can only do what they can do, but it is a practice. So when you have a loss, you know, it can be the dog, it can be a friend's relative, it can be someone that you completely love, someone that you've grown inside you. But you have to think, I have to, you know, can I be bigger? Can I do this the very best I can? What is going to serve me? And of course, you can feel all the emotions. You know, you can feel that pain, you can feel, but you can grow from those experiences. And death is a great teacher, but it's a great gifter. And so when I sit with people, so for example, if I'd arrived into your experience, I come neutral. So I come with the possibility that you will grow from this, that grace will touch you, or it might destroy you. I don't know. And I want to be the best support I can be. So sometimes I come, the easiest way to describe it is people are in a choppy sea. Their life experience is, you know, thrashing them around. And it's sort of like, oh my God, I'm drowning. What am I going to do? And I come and try to be a life raft. for those people so that they can hang on, they can have respite care, they can feel safe, they can feel supported, but ultimately they have to go back into that choppy sea until that experience is complete for them. And they're going to live with that loss, but they can do it well or it can destroy them. And it's not, sometimes people don't have a choice. That's a bit of a harsh word, but it's how we work, how we play with what life offers us and what our life experience is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, yes. Like you said, death has been your teacher. Death has absolutely been my teacher, and death brought, you know, the experiences of death brought me this like sadness that I've never experienced before, the primal screams and sounds and that came out of me. And it has also opened my awareness, my eyes, my knowing into this like other level of ecstasy, joy, love that I didn't know existed before the death too.
Yeah. And that's a full life. That's the full gamut of emotions. And so when I'm speaking about death, I'm generally talking about sadness and loss as a central neutral point. And from there, you can either go to, you know, grief with all the emotions in between, or you can go to joy. And there, the joy and grief actually are the same thing, because they're both our love transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And death really takes us into the profound. So most of the time we're living in the mundane existence of life, even if we're ecstatically joyful in it, or we're terribly distressed. And sometimes life just shits on people. You know, it, some people have an easy journey and others have one obstacle and tough experience after another. It's our lives are what they are. And I find that the best way for me is just to be open to everything, to appreciate that most of the time I'm in the mundane, but on the inside I'm in the profound. And then when someone is dying or a death has occurred, especially if it's a sudden, shocking death, then I'm invited in to share that with people and with whatever I have to offer them in that moment. And I see that they are in the profound. And so it's my part of my role is to honor that and journey with them in that until that experience is further along. So often I come and sit at the kitchen table with everyone and a death has occurred. We're creating a ceremony together. We're talking that through. But I have to hold that possibility that I spoke of before, that they might, it might destroy them or it might change them into something incredible. And because I live in a community and because I'm very public, I bump into those people, you know, 5, 10, 20 years down the track. And often people will say, you know, I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't wish that, you know, because they've died, their children have died, their babies have died, but they have grown from that experience and they still hold that person very dear and precious, but they're not in this longing for things to be different, which is, the Buddhists say, you know, it's the cause of suffering, is wanting things to be different to what they are. And it's sort of pretty simple. And so there's a range of options that we have, and we can, I mean, we can choose life, we can choose death. And if people that we know choose to kill themselves because they don't want to suffer, they want to end that suffering, whatever the reasons are, it's our job to honor that experience, to live with our loss, to process those feelings. And it's, we have to do our work as those that live on. And we have to do that with every death we experience.
Yes.
In preparation for our own.
Yes. So you speak about this in a few places about how in French they call the orgasm like le petit mort, like the little death. and speak to how you don't want to miss your death, and how you're, you know, walking towards knowing that you're dying and that you want to be fully aware. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more about what dying well looks like and what that is like for you moving towards knowing that you're dying and what that might be like.
So we don't know how we're going to behave until we find ourselves in that moment. So for some of us, it will be a diagnosis and a journey with illness or a disease or a disability, whatever. Some people will have a mental health experience throughout their whole life or an onset of that. And some people will die through an accident or through murder or something like that. We don't know. But what I do know, let me premise too, that I don't have a belief in what happens after death. I'm open to that possibility, but I hear many stories from people directly who have had experiences with their people who have died and that have come to them in a presence, in a dream, in a sign, whatever. That none of that happens to me. I'm just plodding along here, living my life without any, you know, cosmic experiences happening, apart from a couple when I was much younger. So what life offers me is it offers me an experience once. And so I've learned to be very present, so I don't miss that experience when it's on offer. But I don't get an abundance of them. The universe seems to think I only need it once. I'm going to learn that lesson and roll with that. And that is how I've become. And so I don't know how I'm going to die, slowly or quickly. But what I do know is that I haven't worked 30 years on that coal face to miss that moment. So I, you know, if I'm going to die in a car accident and that car's coming towards me, I won't be screaming. I will be thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die. And I'm going to be as present as I can to what occurs. So if something leaves the body, which might be my intrinsic nature, which might be my spirit, which might be my soul essence, my consciousness, whatever, or nothing. I don't know. But I do not want to miss that moment of my physical body dying. And because I, even though I don't have a belief, I can't believe that we've created this whole belief structure around spirit and soul and essence, that something doesn't happen. Because so many people are in touch with their people, that I don't want to miss that. So I'm living my life absolutely fully, you know, experiencing as much as I can, enjoying that, but I'm ready for death at any moment.
Yes. Well, I love the invitation to imagine that death could be orgasmic or pleasurable, you know, just like birth can be.
Yeah. Well, and those of us that are mothers will know that, you know, the birthing experience can be terribly painful, or it can be full on, or it can be, you know, in amongst that pain, it can still be an extraordinarily enjoyable experience, and for some people, orgasmic. And our human bodies are so amazing that I also have to believe that in that, it will be an amazing experience.
Yeah. You once said that one good ceremony around death can save you 12 months of therapy. I wonder if you can share what a good ceremony around death, what sort of, are there certain elements that that would have for you or?
Yeah, I mean, I actually say that often. I said it yesterday when we finished the ceremony for our friend. And people spoke to me about various things. So because in a ceremony, so I never say it's a celebration of life. I just call it a ceremony because sometimes it is a celebration of their life, but it's also an acknowledgement of their death. And it's an acknowledgement of all the emotions and responses that are in the room. And I'll just speak to yesterday, there were probably 20 kids, two different families, the family of the woman who died and her partner. And they were present, and it was a big experience for them. And so all the time, as the person, the celebrant conducting that ceremony, I was dancing with the children and dancing with the adults, because for the children, they are learning about death. And so they all came up on the stage. Some of them spoke, some of them didn't. And I said, it doesn't matter whether you speak or not, just standing up to demonstrate that you loved someone is enough. Because look at those adults. A lot of them are not going to get up because they haven't had a practice like you're doing. You're practicing standing up here so that when that time comes, as you get bigger and you're ready to speak, you'll know how it feels. And that was a lesson for the adults, because then some of them did get up and they said, I never thought I would get up to speak, but you know, I knew that I would regret it. And so in a ceremony, you first of all, you have to think, what purposes do I want that ceremony to serve? And you might make a list. You might be in a team, you might be in a family, you might be in a group of friends, and you take everything that people need, you make it a list, and then you jiggle that list so that that ceremony can address those things in an order that picks you up at the beginning, carries you into a place where you acknowledge the sadness or the shock or whatever it is that that death offers you. And from there, you have to touch that. And from there, you go up into sharing of stories or an honoring of that person, which is the middle, the heart of that ceremony. And then you close it in a way that that takes you into the rest of your life living with that person, not physically in it. And it's sort of simple. It has a beginning, middle, and an end. And whatever you need it to serve, you work out where that those things fit. So, for example, it's no good having a great ceremony where people have been laughing and crying, and then you finish on a, you know, on a down piece of music. You always finish on an uplifting piece of music. But if the ceremony hasn't done its job properly, people won't be able to rise to that. But generally, they've brought their emotions, they've brought everything to that ceremony, they've dissolved them, they've let them go in the collective. Sometimes they don't even know they feel like that. It arises during this ceremony. And then they, if you fully acknowledge something and feel it fully, you can let it go. You can wish it well. You can say, I've suffered, you know, I've hurt enough. Now I want to feel better. And this is the place to do it. And off we go. And in that hour, or an hour and a half, whatever, less than an hour, I don't know whether you can do honor someone who's lived a long life in less than an hour or even a short life. Maybe with babies, you can have a shorter ceremony because there's not so much to honor. But what there has been is the transformation of the people. So, you know, you don't have to birth a live baby to be a mother. Once that baby is conceived and growing inside you, you can have a choice. You can choose a termination if that's the right choice for you, and you can wish that spirit well and that baby well, and or you can birth that baby, and whether that baby is dead or alive, you have become a mother. And you've become a family, the parents have become grandparents, and it changes everybody. We don't have to wait for it to be born if we don't want to. So, but that's, you know, and that's what you would be honoring, that that child has already transformed everyone's lives, whether it's alive or dies shortly after birth. So if you can go into that ceremony fully, and it's like an extreme sport. It's like skiing downhill. It's like jumping out of an aeroplane. You know, you just want to be fully in it, fully present, bring everything you've got to it, you know, thrash yourself around in it, and then be done with it. And it will continue to resonate, but the rawness of it is addressed in that moment. You can't stay that raw endlessly because it doesn't serve people.
Yes, I mean, I agree with you. The ceremony can be so impactful and change an experience entirely. For me, it had, like, ceremony has for me as well. Sorry.
I was just going to add one thing to that. Sorry. That my role is, again, when I come to the table or the bedside, I come neutral. And when I come to the ceremony, I come buoyant. So that people can, because they're already drowning. And what they need is to hang on to something in order to be able to swim off. Clearly, I spend a lot of time in the ocean. And so most of my examples are about the water, which, like, as soon as I finished that ceremony, I found a swimming pool and dived in and just wash it all off. Because it's not mine to carry. I don't need all their emotions. I need them to give them up. I need them to transform them, but I don't want them. I don't need to carry them, which is why after 30 years of that work, I'm still, you know, vibrant, alive. This is what great self-care feels and sounds like. And not merging with the people, not taking on their suffering, but just being able to love them in their suffering. But not in a patronizing or matronizing, sickly sort of there sort of way. It's because I get to see people be amazing. I get to see people in their courage, and it's my role to accompany them in their journey and offer them the possibility of something more than, you know, laying on the couch under a blanket and never recovering from that. And so it's an extraordinary experience to bring that neutrality and that buoyancy to people so that they can get respite care, even in the ceremony or at the bedside, and to be able to live their lives with processing that stuff in an hour and a half, rather than carry on and then have to go to therapy and work it all out or be destroyed by it. That's the best I can do. And I'm cramming it and I'm just saying, here it is. You know, it's well-crafted, it's skillful, it's profound. Come with me and see what happens. And they do. But it's real. It's absolutely real and authentic. It's not airy-fairy. It's not clever. It's very simple and caring and honoring.
Yes. Yes. One thing that I have been reflecting on recently is the way, I know we're coming to a close here soon, but the colonization of the medical system, the way the medical system has colonized both birth and death. And there, I have witnessed mostly medicalized death. I wonder if where you are in the world, if that is true, if it's mostly very highly medicalized death where people are, you know, attached to pumps and things like that, or is there more physiological death happening in your
I think a lot of people, just like we reclaimed birth in the 80s, probably before you were born, and we all started having home births again, which have always happened. And so death, we also, stroppy people like me, also started to reclaim death because they didn't want it to be a medical experience. They didn't want it to be a religious experience. They wanted it to be a human experience. And sometimes a hospital is the best place to die because of the pain management that's needed and the circumstances. But a lot of people also will choose not to eat and drink and to allow their body to close down. And a lot of people will be able to die at home with support of their family and friends. and also visiting palliative care or hospice workers or whatever. But the biggest thing that obstructs that is fear, people's fear. And so when people come to a place, and I also lived through the 80s in the queer community, which I'm part of, and watching lots of my friends die from HIV, which was an extraordinary experience of watching young people become old people and disintegrate, their bodies disintegrating before your eyes. And it was like a war zone, and many people are dying as we speak in war zones. So to have the time to even have this conversation about death is an absolute luxury when the brutality of humanity can be happening simultaneously. So it's really, you know, you have to work through your life to consider how that's going to be, what you're going to do, because it's about knowing what your options are, considering them, and then making the choices that are right for you. And so if you spend time talking with friends, talking with family, saying, if this situation happens to me, this is what I want to happen. And if you are, you know, it's a bit like learning to ride a bike, you know, you have to think about learning to ride a bike. You can get on it and you'll fall off. You have to think, I have to sit on the saddle, I have to hold the handlebars, I have to get my balance, then I have to turn the pedals. And so you have to think, how am I going to be when I die? Do I want to be terrified? Do I want to control everything? Do I want to be fearless? Do I want to explore that? Do I want to be able to express that I'm afraid, but I'm okay in that? Because that's a normal response. And so it's great to think about it and discuss it and explore that. So while people are meditating, while people are doing yoga, you know, you want to appreciate how lucky you are to have a fabulous body. But in a meditation, you want to might do that about a meditation on death. And instead of going for mindless black, deep, rich black space or whatever mantra you're reciting, you might want to lay down and think, how would I feel if I was dying, if I was going to die today, if this was going to be my last day? How would I want to live the quality of that dying? And it's a great practice. So some people will get it, they'll have an epiphany and they'll just do it well. Others will do it not so well. But my absolute understanding after 30 years is, the better you live, the better you're going to die. Full stop.
Mm-hmm. Love that. So as we come to a close here, if there's anything else you feel like you would like listeners to know about death, dying well, and then share with everyone where they can find you and what sort of offerings you have in the world.
Sure. So I think we've covered quite a lot there. That's a benefit. But it's also, you know, if you're looking for someone, you have to find the person that sings to you. So some people are dry, some people are serious. You know, I'm just how I come, like this. And this year I've taken a year off from teaching, from doing a few things like this, and a few ceremonies and a few activities that are public speaking, but I haven't been teaching. But I'm going to resume that next year because there's a need for that. And I feel that it's part of what I have. You know, I just offer it up. And if no one books in, if no one comes, then it's easy. I can carry on enjoying my time swimming and, you know, having a great time. But so next year I have some in-person trainings, but they're in Australia. I'm actually coming to the States, to Olympia in Washington State, and a friend of mine is organizing it'll be a 4-day training, which is the Death Walker training and a day on ceremony, on crafting ceremony for more challenging death. And that will be, the details of that will be on the Natural Death Care Center website. This is the first time I've mentioned it because we've only just organized it. But I also have on my own website, zenithvirago.com, the whole package of online trainings because I can't always travel. People can't travel to wherever I am. And so it's all there. And it comes, it's a transmission. It's really a bit like this podcast, I'm hoping, is a transmission because it's not just taking in what I'm saying and listening to that. It's feeling what I'm saying, the quality of that information, and letting it touch you through all of your senses, not just your intellect, because your intellect won't serve you when you're dying. You will need your whole nervous system, your whole, emotional system. You'll need every part of you to do that as well as you can. And so, so the naturaldeathcarecenter.org, zenithvirago.com, TED Talk, film, you find it, just enjoy it and take what sings to you. And if you're listening, you think, I don't like her. Find someone that sings to you, but find something that enriches your life in order to prepare you for death.
Yes, thank you. And yeah, I'll include all relevant links below. And I am from Washington State and have plenty of family there. So maybe I'll see what dates you're going to be there and see if maybe we could even meet in the flesh.
Sure. Well, the best thing, and perhaps people might want to sign up to the newsletter because the dates will be there, but it'll be in August.
Okay.
August. And as soon if you write to me, I can put you in the file, and then notify you when we've locked it in. I'm just toying with which weekend it will be.
Sure. Yeah, wonderful. Great.
Okay, it was good, wasn't it?
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted that we got to have this dialogue today. Thank you again.
Well, and good on you. Good on you because you're exactly what I'm talking about, where you're taking that experience and turning that into something of benefit to others. And that's a great, not everybody doesn't have to create something, but to know that that is possible is enough for some people, that they'll be able to live on and live on well through whatever may seem like a challenging experience. Great. Full respect to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in today to the Heart of the Soul. If you love the podcast, I would be so grateful if you would choose to subscribe, rate, review, or share the show. If you feel aligned with me and my energy and are feeling drawn to unearth your wild inner knowing, birth your baby wild and free, need support navigating the medical system, are feeling stuck in your grief, are curious about receiving an intuitive mediumship reading, or need a safe person to debrief and integrate a traumatic birth experience with, I am here for you. I have walked alongside women and mothers for over a decade, witnessing real healing, change, confidence, and stability be unearthed in them. I believe that women claiming their sovereignty, returning to their own inner knowing and embodying their wild will truly transform the world. To learn more, book your free clarity call at www.birthingnova.love. Until next time, remember to be brave, be love, be wild, be you, and be the change that you seek for yourself. And also for the generations to come. Mwah.